Well, good morning, everyone. Let's go ahead and get started. So my name is Dan Wallin, and I'm excited to be here. And I don't know if I'm excited or not. It's so bright that I can't really see you. So I've been in the room next door the whole time. So we are here, hopefully, to talk about integrating Angular with ASP.NET Core, and specifically the RESTful service aspect of ASP.NET Core. But before we do that, a little bit about me. So I live in Arizona. And I'm still adjusting the dang humidity out here. I always joke, you don't even have to really drink water. You can just kind of go, you know, suck it in the water. It's so humid. But anyway, I run a consulting company called Wallin Consulting. We do a lot of training and consulting on these type of topics, Angular, ASP.NET Core, Node, things like that. And I'll point to there's one blog post you might be interested in that covers a lot of the different Angular projects I have out there and ASP.NET Core as well. Now, the content for this, these slides are all online right now, so you can get to them now or later. But if you want to just take a quick snapshot or write down that link, that'll get you to everything you need, including all of the GitHub repos that I'm going to tell you about a little bit later. So what we're going to do is kind of start from scratch, though, and talk about, first off, you know, what is ASP.NET Core and specifically the RESTful service aspect of it by you. What are you able to do with that? And how many have already done, like, an MVC 3.4.5 web API? Probably a bunch of you, I bet. Okay, well, the good news is you already pretty much know everything you need to know. Now, if you haven't done it, I'll show you that it's very, very easy to get started with. You don't really have to be a master of anything as long as you know C#. It's pretty straightforward to create a RESTful API. So we'll talk about that as we move along here. All right, so let's moving on. Here's kind of the agenda. I'm going to give you a kind of a big picture view of what we're after here. Some of you might come from more of a server-side rendering type of option for your app, where most of what you do is being done on the server side. You know, render that HTML that comes down to the browser, and that'd be one way to do it. We're going to talk about kind of the what I call road number two, which is let's push as much functionality as we can to the browser, the device, whatever it may be. And that way, if we ever want to swap out the back end or the front end or even middle parts of it, you can do that. And so we'll talk about the Angular and kind of how that fits in part. Then we'll talk about how to get started with web API, specifically in ASP.NET Core, and create these RESTful type services. And then we'll get into the Angular side of it and talk about Angular services, what they are. We'll talk a little bit about something called an observable. I don't know if anyone had a chance to go to my friend Ward Bell's talk. He gave a great talk on RxJS and observables. But we'll talk about that and compare them with promises. And then we'll talk about how Angular services can actually be injected into our components and show that process. Very straightforward to do if you haven't done it before. So let's jump on in here. So from a big picture standpoint, I think a lot of us that have been in the web world, you know, for more than a year or so have done what I'll call road number one. And that is you might have used MVC or something along those lines to call into some type of data layer. That data layer then, you know, calls back into a database, and then we're kind of off and running. And that would be our traditional web server type of framework where the server does most of the work. Now, you know, one of the more important aspects of this is probably security and validation. That's not going to go away with road number two that I'm going to talk about. But what will go away is rather than having everything done on the server, I kind of like to think of it, it becomes more of a data server, data security validation. And that's what we'll focus on in the next hour here is how that works. So we're going to talk about, you know, how do you return JSON data rather than the HTML and work with it. Now, a lot of you raised your hand that you've done something like this, so that part's probably not new to you. But if you haven't, I'll kind of break in gently here. So when it comes to ASP.NET Core and the whole web API concept, if you haven't done much with Core, what I think is really exciting is that, number one, it's cross-platform. It's very straightforward now to actually get the same exact code base going. You know, on my Windows machine or on my Mac, I have both going right now, or even on a Linux machine if you want, especially like in production, if you want to run Linux VMs, works very well. One of the more exciting pieces as well, I guess you would say, is middleware. And this is the ability to add in specifics when a request comes in to do something to that request, or when a response leaves to do something to that response. Now, a lot of you have probably dealt with this. If you've done .NET in the past, you've probably done like modules, for instance. And a similar concept, but I think much easier to, first off, kind of reason about the flow of it compared to modules, and also very easy to maintain compared to what I would argue modules did. It's much more there in your face, and you can see exactly what's happening to the request, exactly what's happening to the response, and that's pretty neat. We'll talk about that a little bit actually coming up in a moment. One of the changes, if you haven't done ASP.NET Core RESTful Services, is that we used to have a base class called API Controller, and API Controller is now just Controller, just like it's always been with MVC controllers. And so now it's all standardized and very consistent, which is awesome. It's less to remember, it's just easier to get going. Routing is actually very similar. I'm going to be using attribute-based routes, but you could do convention-based or attribute. If you've done those before, not a ton has changed there, although there's some new options we'll briefly talk about. And then one of the really big changes is dependency injection. I used to use Unity a lot with my kind of traditional MVC-type apps, and now we have dependency injection baked in, and you've probably already seen some talks, given that it's now the last day of the conference, on this, but I'll show you a little bit of how that works as well. And then it's very fast. They've really done a good job of making sure the Kestrel server is very fast and highly performant and things like that. So when it comes to ASP.NET Core, if you're new to it, you kind of have two ways now you can use the controller base class. As mentioned, there's just one base class now, and we have an action result we can return, which is basically the HTML, if you're using the Razor side of it. Or we have an action result we can return if you want to do the JSON side. And so everything's consistent. We have the same base class. We have this action result. And it's very, very easy to get started with and learn. And if you've done any MVC at all, you'll pick it up immediately. If you haven't, you'll also pick it up really fast because the templates Microsoft gives us make it just super easy to get started with, as you'll see in a moment. All right, so let's talk about creating a web project. Now, I'm going to create one here in a moment, but just like normal in Visual Studio, you can say new ASP.NET Core project, and then you'll have three main options as of today. And so you can do the empty, you can do the web API, or you can do the MVC type approach. Now, I'm going to do kind of the web API. That'll give us a little starter demo that helps you out, does most of the underlying machinery for you, so you don't really have to do a lot of code at all. And then it's just up to you to, of course, fill in the data. Now, I'm going to do a pretty simple one to start, and then at the end, I'll give you a link to all this source code. I'll have one for you that hits a real database and has a data layer and all that fun stuff as well. But in the 45 minutes or so I have left, we won't be able to do quite all of that. But we'll do some of it. Now, what if you're on a Mac? Well, you could use Visual Studio for Mac now, which I have that on here. But you could also use, there's some Yeoman generators out there, like Generate ASP.NET. You could use the .NET New. We'll talk about that as an option here in just a moment. And so there's a lot of options out there if you want to get started on really anywhere. Maybe on Linux. Maybe it's not Mac. You want to run on Linux. We could do this as well. Pretty cool. So in this case, if you haven't done NPM before, there's a Yeoman generator, it's called. Yeoman's kind of a scaffolding tool to generate code for you. And this NPM install will basically go out and globally install this thing called Yeoman. That's the Yo. And then Generator ASP.NET can be installed as well. Then, if you want to get a project, which you'll see the command line here, what it looks like, all you have to do is type yo ASP.NET, and boom, you now can pick from a bunch of projects they have. So that I'm not going to demo that one, but that is an option that you can do, which is actually a pretty cool and easy way to get started if you want to just whip it up quick on Windows, Mac, or Linux. Now, as far as what you're going to see in a moment, we have the attribute-based routes I mentioned. And this would be, of course, if you're new to this, when the URL comes in from, say, an Angular app, how do we route that to the appropriate controller that serves up the JSON data? And the short answer there is we use the route attribute here. This is kind of the base route. And you might notice this kind of square bracket controller there. That's going to substitute in the name of the controller, which would be customers in this case. And that'll make it so that you can now say, you know, localhost or whatever your host is, /API/, and then it'll plug in customers. So that might be a little bit different than some of you have seen. Now, other than that, you'll notice the base class is controller. All right, very simple. Everything now just inherits from controller in core, which makes it nice and easy to actually work with, less to remember. I don't know about you, but my brain only has about this much room in it, and you know, once I reach those bounds, I can't remember everything. So it's really nice that they've consolidated, because it's just that much easier to get started with. All right, now the next thing that is really cool that we'll also see coming up here is that we also have this dependency injection. And I suspect, again, some of you probably had some time to go to a few of the talks out there on this, but you know, notice this configure services here. Now, this is in our startup CS, and if you haven't seen this yet, let me give you a nutshell version of kind of what it does. The startup CS is going to be where you're going to wire up your middleware and your dependency injection. And so they have this configure services, and you'll notice this add scoped here. Now, in this example, we have this iCustomers repository mapping to a customers repository. And what that's going to do, if you haven't seen this before, is this interface, of course, will just be our, you know, our contract, our metadata, if you will. And we can use that in all of our controllers. And so we can do constructor injection, for example. And what that'll do is at runtime, it's going to inject in a new instance of customer repository. Now, what add scoped means is scope the object, the lifetime of the object, to the request. So in other words, if you call into an object like a controller and it needs it injected, then you're going to get an instance. But if that calls something else that also needs that injected, which I probably won't need, but if it did, I'm going to get that same instance for the lifetime of the request. And then you have two other options. You can do add transient. Add transient would mean create a new object every time another one wants it. And then you have you can add a singleton if you just want one object that sticks around for kind of forever, if you will. So in this case, we're going to scope customer repository to the lifetime of the request. And that way, it kind of hangs around. But then when the response goes back, that object is free to get cleaned up. And we can garbage collect and things. And that's what that looks like. Now, here's an example of using it. So now notice we have our route up on top. We've inherited from controller. And then I have this iCustomers repository field up top. Now, normally, if you haven't done dependency injection before, normally you can't have the empty constructor missing, which it is here. You know, notice I only have a constructor that takes the one parameter, which is my interface type. And so the challenge in the old days was if you didn't wire up dependency injection of some type, if you took out the constructor, it wouldn't work. Well, with dependency injection, it will automatically know that, oh, it's okay, I know what to call, this has been registered, and it's going to give you that instance of the customer's repository that you saw earlier, and inject that in, and then you can do your data access calls and things like that. So if you haven't done it yet, it's actually super easy to get started with. And I really like it because, like I said, I used to use Unity. You know, I've used AutoFact, Ninject. You know, those are the the Ninja one. That was always the coolest one because they have ninjas on their homepage and like a no-brainer that you got to go with what looks the best, right? But anyway, I used to use some of those, and you can still use those, by the way. That's still a possibility with the ASP.NET Core. But I, at this point, have kind of said, hey, I for what I need, I like what they're generating. And I just use the kind of built-in one. But if you don't want to, you can use some of the others out there. All right, now the last thing to look at here, and then we'll go create one and kind of start playing around here a little bit, is an action. Now, there is a change here. Look at that HTTP GET. And you'll notice that instead of having to define or use a separate attribute there, I'm actually using HTTP GET, and then I have the curly brace ID, which is my route parameter. Now, that syntax hasn't really changed at all. But what this is basically saying, if you're new to it, is that, hey, this is a GET request, and it's going to be API/customer/2. Now, a lot of you that have done Web API, that should be hopefully just a review. What's nice, though, is you can actually put it right on the HTTP GET. So if you haven't seen that, that keeps it nice and clean, I think. Now, the ID, of course, will kind of automatically get mapped off of the route into our parameter there. And then it'd be up to me to use my data layer that was injected earlier to do something with them. And so we'll build this out here real quick. We're not going to do a data one for the initial demo, but I'll show you one at the end that does. All right, so before we move into the Angular side, let's switch over here to Visual Studio. And if you haven't done it before, it's very simple to get started. We can just create an ASP.NET Core web application. And I'm going to double check that Wi-Fi is still working. All right, it says it is. We shall see. All right, and name doesn't really matter for this particular one, so I'm just going to hit OK there. And we're going to get prompted, as you saw earlier, you know, what do you want to create? And so I could do the empty project and start from scratch. I don't think I'll do that. I could do web API, or I could obviously do web application. I'm a huge Docker fan, so it's pretty awesome. We won't have time to go into that one. Did a talk on that earlier, but let's do web API here. Now, if you've done web API before with the former ASP.NET MVC, then you've already seen kind of a values controller that they'll add. And so if I go into controllers here, you'll see this values controller. And notice that I have my get and all that fun stuff, and then you know we'll give it a sec to hopefully not give me red here in a little bit. But let's go ahead and run this guy. And then while that's going, I'm going to go borrow from myself real quick. This is a project I'll have for you. But I'm going to save a little bit of typing for you. All right, so that is looking good. Now let's go ahead and make this slightly better. We'll do a customers controller. And what that's going to do now is this guy will be API/customers, kind of like you saw before. And let's do this. Let's change this. I'm just going to go with a list of customer, and then we'll, I missed it. Let's generate a class really quick here. We'll come back to that in a moment. And what I'm going to do is we'll just hard code it for now. Like I said, later I'm going to show you we'll actually do a more realistic one. Let's just try to get something going to integrate these two technologies here. All right, so we're going to do a new customer here, and then I'm going to have some properties. And we'll come back to that. So let me go over to my customer. Let's go ahead and add in just a couple properties. Let's do like, name. And let's do like city. All right, pretty standard stuff so far. And let's go ahead and fill in the blanks here. So let's do name equals Dave, city is Orlando, and let me just grab this. All right, and let's do Michelle in somewhere else. I live in the Phoenix area, so we'll do that. Okay, so pretty straightforward. Obviously, this is where you would normally inject in your data layer, and then we can make a database call, which I'll show you at the end. But we'll get that going. Now, let's go ahead and run it as is. Now, by default, it's going to go to API/values, so I'm going to have to tweak it a little bit. But we'll let it fire up here, and we'll change it to API/customers. Just make sure we're getting some data here. Otherwise, I'll get to the end of the talk and be like, shoot, no, that didn't work. Okay, so that looks pretty good, and we can see our port and all that. So, all right, now a little bit more. What I'm going to do is create an Angular project with the Angular CLI. But I actually want to make these two integrate, of course. I mean, that's kind of what the talk's about. So I'm going to go ahead and set up cores real quick on this, cross-origin resource sharing. And I don't know who comes up with these acronyms. Anyone ever wonder if there's like a round table somewhere, and people have this job to come up with really hard-to-remember acronyms? I always wonder where these come from. But anyway, cross-origin resource sharing, if you're not familiar with that, it's the ability to allow other domains to call into our RESTful API, because I'm going to run my Angular app on a separate port, which is going to be cross-domain. And so we'll talk about that. So what I'm going to do first is let me come into NuGet and browse. And this is why I hope the Wi-Fi is cooperating. And we'll do this, this ASP.NET cores, you'll see, ASP.NET core cores. I want this top one, actually. All right. There it is. Let's go ahead and install this and pray that the Wi-Fi cooperates for me. Otherwise, we'll jump to a demo I have. Okay, cool. Looks like that worked. So we're good there. So now what I need to do, and this gets us into the startup. In my startup, you'll notice I have my configure services. This is where you do your dependency injection. And then I have configure. And for those that haven't played with core, this is kind of the new way where you register all the things you want to inject and all the things that are middleware. And this cores is going to be some middleware. So first off, I need to register the default settings for it. I'm basically going to allow anything to hit my RESTful API. I'm on localhost, so I'm not too worried. But we'll talk about that. And then second off in the configure, I'm going to go in and I need to say, hey, use cores. And that's going to add it to the middleware pipeline so that when a request comes in, it can say, yeah, I like you or I don't like you based on what I configure. All right, so let me go back because now I'm going to not type this. And now that I've added core support, let me just throw this in right around here somewhere. All right, we're going to add in cores. Now, this would be the ultimate in permissiveness. I'm basically saying any domain can hit me with any header, with, you know, you could do anything. I don't really care. Now, normally, if you only have very specific domains that would be calling you, then you can come into this origin area, and there's a different option, different method you can do, where you can actually list the origins, or in other words, the domains and the ports and stuff like that, that you want to be able to allow to hit you. But we're going to go ahead and leave that. Now, same thing, I normally, like if you're only doing, let's say, get and post, then normally on the methods, you'll just do get and post, or maybe you only allow the accept header, stuff like that. You can lock all that down if you want. Now, the next thing I'm going to do is, now that cores is there, let's come on down to here and we'll say app.useCores, like so. And then notice the name up here. It was allow any origin. Whoop, that was the wrong button. All right, allow any origin. So let me come into here and let's put allow any origin, except for let me put quotes around that. All right, oh, yes, it is. This is why when you code in front of 100 of your best friends, it makes it a little easier. This is like the ultimate in pair programming. All right. Yeah, try that when you get back to work. It'll be like, hey, team, why don't you come watch me for the day? Let's see how this goes. All right. I won't even tell you some of the first talks I ever gave. I have some good stories there, but we won't tell those. So, all right, now I've enabled cores, but we need to apply it to our controller. So I'm going to go back. I didn't rename it, but we're going to come into here now, and I'm going to say enable cores, and then paste that guy in, and then we need to resolve the namespace. You'll notice the namespace, same as the package I got from NuGet. Okay, and we'll grab that. All right, now the only reason I'm doing this, if you're new to it again, is if I was adding Angular directly to this project, which you can do. I'm going to mention that in just a moment. I'll tell you kind of three ways you could do that if you wanted. But I'm not going to do that. And I'm going to tell you why I'm kind of a fan of keeping it separate, actually. And by doing that, though, now I have a separate server running for, you know, my Angular. I'm going to use the Angular CLI server. And then, obviously, I have Web API as a server. And I want them to talk, and so that's why I have cores on. So if you're, I know a lot of you have probably done cores, but if you haven't, that's why I'm doing that, to make it so that other, you know, domains can call up. Okay, so let's just run this one more time. We'll go back to API/customers, and we'll make sure this is working. And then we'll kind of switch gears and move to the other side of the house, which is going to be our Angular. So let's go to customers here. And all right, still looks good. That could be cached. Who knows, right? All right, looks good. Okay, now I'm going to go ahead and just leave that guy running for now. And let's switch on back and let's talk about the kind of Angular side here and what we can do. So now that we have a, albeit very primitive, Web API setup or RESTful service setup, only a GET at this point I'm going to be using, how do we communicate with that? Well, if you've done AngularJS before or jQuery or something like that, you'll know you have to do an XHR, XML HTTP request, or HTTP, we just call it, request to the server. And so that's what we're going to be doing here. Now, in Angular, if you're new to it, And when I say angular, by the way, I mean two or higher. As of today, that'd be the 4.0 plus version. But we just call it Angular now. In fact, it's just Angular. That's what they like to say. If you hear AngularJS, especially if you haven't heard this yet, that generally refers to the 1X version, 1.6. Whatever it is now. And I'm going to be focusing, obviously, on the new one, though, with TypeScript and things. All right, so the big picture of Angular. I haven't had time to do it yet. I have a video up on YouTube called AngularJS in 60-ish Minutes. And one of these days, I'm going to do the same thing, but this will be kind of the lead-in for that video if I ever have time to do it. And that is, what is the big picture? How do you put all the puzzle pieces, or what I like to call the Lego blocks, together for Angular? So let's cover that first. Then we'll talk about how Angular can talk with the service and things. So first off, if you think of Angular as being a bunch of Lego blocks, we need to organize those Lego blocks. My kids are getting older now, but when they were younger, they were big Star Wars Lego fans. Does anybody have any kids? Or you could say yourself, by the way. Yeah, come on, you know it's not your kids, it's you. But that's okay, though. But you know, they were really into it. And over the years, what my wife has done, so we don't lose all the pieces, is organize them into Tupperware containers. And so if you go into one of the closets upstairs, we have this closet literally that's just stacked with these Tupperware things. I figure that's, I always say that's my retirement or something, hopefully in 20 years. But the reason we do that, of course, is we want to keep everything organized. That would be equivalent, the Tupperware Rubbermaid container, to a Angular module. Okay, at a minimum, you're going to have at least one Angular module. And if anybody came to my talk earlier on that John and I did on Angular, we kind of covered this. But if you haven't, think of this as a big bucket. That's all it is. It's like a Tupperware container. Now, with Angular, you can configure routes. And routes would be a client-side way to load different components, which we'll talk about next. Components are your Lego blocks. All right, now components are going to be basically the code and the template. So the code needs to get data from somewhere, which will be our RESTful API. Take that data, feed it into a template, and then that output will go to the screen. But we want to load different components potentially. So we have a template and code, but where does the code get the data from? Well, we could put it into the component itself, like the HTTP call, but that wouldn't be so good. If you're new to this, the kind of word to the wise or proper architecture in the MVC world has always been write thin controllers, right? We don't want these big monstrosities that are just hard to maintain and not good reuse and things like that. So we have the same thing in this world. And if you come from an AngularJS background, you won't be that surprised because we had the same thing there, but we have services. Now, this is what we're going to use to communicate with the server in just a bit here. All right, now the server, or service I should say in this case, is actually the one that does all the reusable type work. I never put my HTTP calls, if I had any client-side business rules, client-side calculations, anything like that. I always put those out in a service. And that way, you could reuse that service not only in this app, but potentially in other applications. Depends on how you kind of architect it. But I like my components to be extremely clean, and I like to delegate. I was at a company a couple months ago. I told this story in the workshop, so if anybody came, sorry, you're going to hear it again. Somebody gave me an example of a component, and it was literally almost 4,400 lines of code in one component. And it mixed every technology you can think of. It wasn't just Angular. And anyway, long story short, don't do that because that will tend to be very hard to maintain. It's not reusable, all those types of things. Now, having said that services are reusable code, they're singletons by default, and they can get the data that ultimately is going to go to the template. And then in the template, we can use other components, other little Lego blocks or directives to maybe iterate through an array, write those out, things like that, and we'll see some of that coming up here. So that's kind of the big picture. This is something that when AngularJS first came out, I probably put this kind of map together, I don't know, maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that. And it really hasn't, if you are coming from AngularJS, it really hasn't changed that much conceptually. Now the code is certainly different, but the concepts still apply, which is nice. But we're gonna focus mostly on the services here today. Now, Angular also has other modules, and given that we have a lot of .NET folks here, you're used to, you know, if you want functionality to write to a file, then you're going to be referencing System.io. You know, if you want to do regular expressions or something, because everybody needs more regular expressions in their life, you're going to do System.txt, and, you know, you get the idea. So it's the same thing in Angular. We have different modules we need to import. For instance, for HTTP, which I'll do in a moment, you have something called HTTP module. Surprise. If you want to work with forms, there's a forms module. And you have to have that available in your app or it doesn't know what to do. So we'll talk about the HTTP one coming up in just a bit. All right, now, the big question I get all the time as we go talk with different companies and people and, you know, good folks like you at conferences is, okay, I know how to create my, you know, ASP.NET Core, or it could easily be just MVC, you know, regular .NET Framework MVC as well. It doesn't really matter for Angular. How do I integrate Angular with it? All right, and I don't know, has anyone run into this where you're like, how do I make it part of the same project, or even if it's separate, what do I do? Now, I'm going to make it separate. We'll talk through the options here, but a couple ways for you. Number one, you could go find, you know, go out to GitHub and find a seed project. That already has the skeleton and the scaffolding and the framework all done. I have one for you. I'll give you a link at the end. So if you just want a like a starter project and it's got Web API set up in ASP.NET Core and it has Angular all set up, I'll give you a link to one that you could use. All right, that would be one option. Probably not my favorite option, but it's an option. Second option. .NET New has a really cool option for, and it runs on Windows or on Mac or Linux, of course, but the .NET CLI has an option where you can install other templates. And so here's one you'll notice where I can do this dash dash install Microsoft ASP.NET Core SPA templates, and then the :: star, what that's doing is say install all of them. Now that will install a built-in Angular template, and now you can say .NET New Angular, and then give it a name of your project, and that will create all the stuff you need to get going with ASP.NET Core and Angular. It's actually really nice. It also adds others, though. I mean, it adds React support. There's one for that. There's one for Aurelia. And there's even one for Knockout, I know they have. So that's what the star means, is pretty much install all the templates that you want. Now, I'm not going to run that one, but if you're interested, it's very simple. If you already have .NET Core installed, then you'll have the .NET CLI. And all you do is run that statement. It takes a little bit of time the first time. I just got to download the NuGet packages. And then, boom, .NET New. And if you just do .NET New, by the way, it'll spit out a bunch of options that are available. In fact, let me just, I'll show you that really quick here. Don't need that one. So let me go into just a console here. This is on the Mac side. But if I just do .NET New. All right, see that? You can do, well, there's a whole bunch. Console, Classlib, MS Test, blah, blah, blah. But you have Angular, Aurelia, Knockout, React, React Redux, Vue, just Web API. So basically all those SPA kind of sounding things, Angular, React, things like that. Now I can very, very easily, in fact, you'll see an example right there. Instead of .NET New MVC, it'd be .NET New Angular. And then, you know, give it a name and things like that. So that's pretty cool if you want. And that would be an option that literally you could have a working Angular kind of Web API setup in a matter of just a minute or so. Now, the other one is you could just use the Angular CLI, actually. A lot of people that have played with it kind of think that, oh, I can't use the Angular CLI because it's going to create a separate thing, and I want mine in my ASP.NET Core project. Actually, you can. It's pretty easy once, you know, everything's easy once you know, right? I had to play with it a little bit, but ng new, give it a project, and then this sd, this is going to be the source code directory. That's what the little sd shortcut switch is. And notice I'm giving it www root there. And that www root, of course, we should all recognize from ASP.NET Core. So that's going to throw it in our kind of public area, our static files area. All right, and then dash dir means, but I want all the other stuff to go in the current directory where I'm running it. You'll see the dot there. Now, what this will do is it's not a bad option. Now you can use the Angular CLI with ASP.NET Core in Visual Studio, pretty much. Super simple once you know, and it actually works really well. Now, I'm going to kind of throw out a fourth option here that I'm going to do in a moment, and that is, what if we don't do any of those, and we just create a completely separate project, even runs on a separate port potentially? And here's my rationale. Once Angular is running, you're just loading JavaScript files, CSS, HTML. Well, those are all static files, right? Now, if I'll give a little caveat to this. If you want your views for Angular to be served up from MVC, okay, then you may not do what I'm going to propose here. But if you have what I'll call just a plain old HTML, JavaScript, CSS app, I like to host that in a different type of server dedicated to static files that's specializes. Maybe Nginx as an example, HAProxy, or others that are out there. Apache, their IIS. You know, there's no reason that you have to have Kestrel in ASP.NET Core serving up your Angular parts. Now, could you? Absolutely, absolutely. If you want to do that, use one of these options. I'm not saying it's a bad way to go. I'm just saying that I'm going to show you there are, other ways we can do it. And that's why we did the course, is so that I could set up a separate one, which we'll do in a moment. Okay, so that would be kind of the three, if you want to have it as part of your Visual Studio project options. Now, let's talk about, I'm going to do that in just a moment here, but let's get through kind of the fundamentals of, if you're new to Angular, what do you need to know to communicate with Web API. Let's say that you got that all set up either as two projects or as one kind of merge project using the options in the last slide. So Angular services, I mentioned, are these singletons. They're reusable. And they're really no different than, in .NET, if you had MVC controllers, how do you call your database? Hopefully not from the controller, right? Hopefully you have a data layer of some type. Same exact concept. That's really what our service is. It's our separate layer of our Angular app. Now, if you're new to Angular at all, one thing you're going to notice here is that we have these imports at the top. This is called ES2015 modules. So Angular is embracing all the latest and greatest technologies that we have. And that's why it is a little bit of a jump code-wise from AngularJS to Angular. And it's because they simply said, hey, we're going to embrace the latest and greatest to get the best performance, get the best productivity, best for maintenance, all that type of stuff. Now, this is TypeScript code. So if you're new to that, if you're as a C# developer, you'll pick up on TypeScript like really fast. It is phenomenal in my opinion. I love it. So what we're doing here, I'm importing an injectable from another area of Angular called Angular Core. And then I'm importing HTTP from another area of Angular called Angular HTTP. Now, the little at Angular, if you're wondering what that is, Angular relies on npm, npmjs.org. It's kind of the equivalent of NuGet for .NET. Well, npm, if you haven't used it, is kind of the NuGet for JavaScript, you could say. And it's extremely popular. Millions and millions. I think they do billions or something like that a month. Don't quote me on that, but it's a lot. So what I'm doing here is the add Angular, that's your category. That's almost like system for us. But add Angular is how npm allows you to categorize things, that at symbol. And then core is kind of like the sub. It'd be like system.io, or in this case, angular.core. Very similar concept there. Now, the injectable. What we're doing here is a lot of people think injectable when they see that that class called data service, that injectable is, this class must be like, injectable, as in dependency injection. Kind of, but that's actually not what that means. What this means is that data service has a constructor that has things that are injectable. So really, it's like saying at constructor injectable, and that's really what it means. Now, the recommendation is, the question usually comes up, well, what if my constructor doesn't have any injectables? What if it's just like, you're doing calculations or something. You don't need any other objects. Then the recommendation in the style guide for Angular is that you still should put injectable on top. And the rationale there is, number one, if you go look at the source code it generates as TypeScript compiles down to ES5 or whatever you compile down to, you're going to see it's very minimal. It's more of a marker. And by the way, I should also mention, for those that haven't seen this, add injectable, it's called a decorator. And this would be analogous to, in .NET, what we would call an attribute. It's basically just metadata about whatever's under it, about the class in this case. All right, you probably figured that out, but if not, that's what it is. Now, notice in the constructor, we have this private HTTP of type HTTP, and this is the TypeScript. And what this is going to do is kind of two things. Number one, at runtime, it's going to tell Angular, hey, I have something that you need to, or you need to give me access to. You need to create this object, not me. Very similar to that add scoped that you saw earlier, except for this would be more like add singleton, actually. Number two, by putting private or public on front of these, that actually creates a property in the class. I kind of wish C# did that, where you could just add a public or private right in front of a constructor parameter, and it would just auto-create a property or something. But who knows? I mean, Anders did write both, so maybe we'll see that. But this will actually add an HTTP property now, which we'll use in just a little bit here. Okay, so that's the initial setup work. We have a way to call the server now. Now from here, once we get the injectable and it's injected and all that fun stuff, we need to be able to use it. Now, calling the server, of course, is going to be an asynchronous call. Right? We don't want that browser locking up on us or something. Browsers are pretty good at not doing that because everything's asynchronous. So there's two kind of ways we can deal with the asynchronous nature of the call. First off, we could use promises. Now, how many of you use promises? I bet you a bunch. Okay, anyone that's done JavaScript and called a server, you probably said, do the call, then when it comes back, or when it's done, then do this callback function. We can do the same thing in Angular if you want, but it's not the default. Instead, they have a much more powerful option. It's based on RxJS, reactive extensions for JavaScript. You can kind of think of RxJS as, how link and lambdas have all those cool functions like where and order by and all those type of things. You can kind of think of it like that a little bit. It does really cool things. So observables are going to be what we're going to be using, but promises are still an option. Now, I'm going to recommend that if you're new to this, don't bail and go right to what you know. Because I have to admit, that was the tendency I did. You always kind of gravitate to what you're good at. And I was good at promises. I've been doing them for years. And then I'm like, what the heck are these dang observable things? And it was one of those, I didn't know what I didn't know at the time because I hadn't used them before. But once I figured them out, they were powerful. So in a nutshell, a promise is basically like an IOU money type thing, that whoever you call promises to pay you back the data once they have the data from the server. Could be 1 second, could be 5 seconds, who knows? And so it usually uses a key function called then. You say, do the call to the server, then call me back here, and you give it a callback type function. The thing with promises, though, you can't cancel a promise. You only get one value. Then that's kind of done. It's like, once you pay me back the money, I can't really go back to you and say, hey, I need another $100, please. Try that sometime, see how that works. Promises are kind of I got it, I'm done. Can't cancel it. Now, observables. These are more of a publish-subscribe model. They're immensely powerful. Like, you can go layer on layer and layer of depth into what observables do. Now, we're going to just kind of have time to scratch the surface here, but an observable is something that you observe and you subscribe to it. So if you've ever worked with the whole publish-subscribe pattern before, it's the same thing. Has anybody ever done a plus equals in C# where you wire up to a delegate and you're kind of observing the event, and then when the event fires, you get notified, but you can get notified how many times? Many, right? That would be kind of analogous to what we can do with observable. I could observe a button click and hook up to it with an observable. I can do what's called a subscribe. And then, if the user clicks it once, okay, I get that. They click it again, I get that. So observables are really streams of data. The analogy I always like to give, because everybody can relate to it, is when you fly and you go to the baggage claim and you have that carousel, the bags flowing around the carousel are the equivalent of you are observing this carousel. And then, I kind of sit there and kind of emulate and go, nope, nope, yep, oh, nope, wrong one. Yep, because they all look freaking black and blue, right? They all look like yours. I think I'm going to buy a pink one just so I can go, yep, that's mine. Don't make fun of me because it stands out. But anyway, that's really what an observable is. As this stream of data, these bags come around, you can get to any of them if you want, and you can also filter and ignore. And you do all kinds of stuff. You could say, only show me the distinct bags. You know, only show me the ones that are black or the ones that are blue or the ones that are green or, you know, whatever. Now, we won't have time to go into that, but if you're interested, there's a pretty cool visual site out there about observables. It's called RX Marbles, I think it is. I believe .com, if I remember right. And they have a nice kind of visual graph of it. So really cool. But anyways, short story here. Observables are about a stream of data. Now, some of you might have already gone, wait a second, the HTTP call you're going to make only returns one piece of data. Yeah, that's true. You get a stream of one, and that data comes in. And the nice thing is, though, it's consistent. You're going to use observables for that. You could use it in forms. You could use it in routing. You can use it in all kinds of things in the Angular world, which is really cool. So let me kind of show you what this looks like here from a comparison standpoint. So an observable, kind of like a promise, is for asynchronous operations. Okay, but a promise can only get one value and you can't cancel it, whereas an observable, you can get multiple values over time if you wanted. Maybe you have an Angular service that just returns random numbers over time, like on a timer basis. So everybody needs one of those. Then you could observe or subscribe to that stream of random numbers and just hook up once, and you'll automatically keep getting notified. Again, not that different than subscribing to events and things in .NET. What's nice, though, is maybe I'm done. Maybe after the two of the bags come around, I'm like, nope, I got my bag, I'm good, stop, and you can unsubscribe as well. So kind of the equivalent would be subscribe is like a plus equals with delegates, and an unsubscribe would be like that minus equals that where you unsubscribe to a delegate. Now, here's kind of what it looks like real quick visually. So with a promise, you call over to like an Angular service, and then it immediately returns you this little object called a promise, which you then wire to a callback function. All right, now you don't have the data yet. You just said, hey, when they pay me back here. And that would be the success callback. And then you can have an error callback. All right, then the service goes off to the server, gets the data, and then resolves the promise once it gets the data, but you get that one piece, and you can't cancel it. Now, an observable would be more like this. You subscribe to some function that you know returns an observable, and what that's going to do is let you also hook that to a callback, but the difference is now that you're subscribed, and you know once the data comes back, you can get multiple pieces of data over time, if you want. Don't have to, but you could. That's the difference. Is imagine, you know, I only want one button click hookup. That'd be more like a promise. An observable would be more like we're used to, where you hook it up once and they click it a million times, you get all million of those clicks and you get notified about that. All right, so here's kind of what they look like. So what we're gonna do in a service is, first off, if you wanna call HTTP or call to the server, you're gonna do HTTP calls, okay. And then you have these things called observables. Now you'll notice these are in a slightly different category. RxJS here, reactive extensions for JavaScript. And then there's some other things you called operators you can import that have kind of funky looking paths. I'm hoping those are going to change in the near future, but for now that's what they are. Now, here's how it works. Notice in the get customers, first off, there's a colon after it, and it says observable of, and we're using generics. This is TypeScript, which supports generics. And you'll notice that I have observable of, and then I have an I customer. Most folks in the JavaScript world think I'm insane because I still like to put I in front of my interfaces. But God, I hate it when you go look at something, you think it's a class, and you go, put the freaking I on it, it's an interface. But anyway, that's just old habits die hard, I guess. But I still like to use that. But I customer would be an interface I have, right? That just has basic data in it, like say name, city, state, things like that. It's an array. Now, what this is saying is if you call get customers, you're not going to get the data right away. You're going to get back this delayed thing, this observable. It's kind of like you walking up to the conveyor belt saying, okay, and then, you know, if it's like whenever I travel, which is a lot, you are like, okay, I'm here, go, you know, and then 20 minutes later, the bags finally come, But that's me subscribing, going walking up to the conveyor belt there. Now, what we're going to do inside of it is I'm going to return immediately the observable. So this.http dot, whatever you do, get, put, post, delete, that's instantly going to return this thing called an observable. When am I going to get the data? I don't know. Depends on how fast my server is. So I'm going to map the response. Now, map, you might recognize if you've ever done any array functions in JavaScript. Really, observables are returning, it's like an array of data over time, though. Right? Array of items into the future, potentially. I'm going to map the response, and this would be every response I would get. Now, in case of HTTP, you only get one, but if you're doing WebSockets or something, you could get multiple over time. But in this case, I'm going to map the response to a callback function, and you'll see I have what a lot of you would call a lambda. This is actually not a lambda here. Well, it is, but it's officially called an arrow function in ES2015 standard. And I'm going to say, pull out the JSON data, and then that'll parse it and convert it to an object. And then, of course, just like lambdas, there's an implicit return right there. So it's like saying, return the object that was the original JSON. Then I also have the ability to catch. Now, the map and the catch, they're operators. They're basically functions that you import, and you'll see those at the top there. Okay, so a little bit different, but for those that have done promises, instead of map, think of dot then. Similar there, because in this world, a promise and observable, they're pretty similar in that you only get back one response anyway. All right, so that kind of is how we would set up our service. Now, we need a way to do something with it as well, which I'll get to in a moment. Now, if you wanted to do a promise, you can. I don't use this, actually, but I put it in just to show you that it's really flexible. You'll notice the to promise call right there, and then a dot then to extract the JSON data and parse it. So it is possible to do that as well if you wanted, but we're not going to do that one. Okay, so let's first off, let me go back, and before we get too much further, how low? I didn't think to plug in my battery. 8%. Hey, we got 8 minutes. Rule number one, plug in your freaking battery. I wasn't even thinking about that, but oh well. We will see if I can get it to run. All right, so what I'm going to do real quick here is let me start up. That's not what I want. Let me start up a command line here. And in this, I'm going to say ng new. All right, I'm going to create a new Angular project here. And in this project, I'm going to call it just my project. And this is going to create a standard Angular project. And again, I'm going to hope that the Wi-Fi is going to cooperate here. Now, what this is going to do is scaffold out a project in this folder. And you know what? I'm going to talk. And just to be safe, this is what you don't ever do in a demo, but my bad for not plugging in here. But while this is doing it, what it's doing at the bottom there is installing npm packages. All right, and the npm packages are going to be responsible for, there's nowhere to plug in anyway. There probably is somewhere, but the npm packages are going to be responsible for loading all the Angular scripts that we might want to have. So we'll let this run. It'll take just a little bit of time. And while that's doing, let me go back, and then we'll come back to this and try to fire this up real quick, and I'll show you. So we've talked about how we can basically generate an observable. Now, how do you subscribe to an observable? So how do we do the component side of it? We have the service, but how does the service get data in? Well, a service is going to have to first off be provided. And so we have to add it into our bucket, our module. If you remember, I said that you can't just have these Lego blocks on the floor. They have to be organized. And at a minimum, you're going to have one module. Now, in this example, you'll see this providers here. And notice I'm providing data service. Now, what ultimately that's doing is saying, hey, Angular, I need you to work with this service that we have. All right. Now, once that service is provided, we can inject it. Now, take a look at this component code and look at the constructor specifically. So notice up top, I've imported data service. Then I have a customer's component that has a constructor that has private data service colon data service. Now, what that'll do again is injection, dependency injection. and that's going to inject that in. Now, this.dataservice.getCustomersNow, that's what we just looked at. That returns the observable. Observables have a subscribe function, kind of like the then in promises. And then it's up to me to say, all right, let's get the data. Now, remember that the service already got the JSON and parsed it, convert it to an object. That was that iCustomer array. Now I'm getting access to it, and then I simply update a property I have called customers. So I say this.customers, that property equals the customers I got. All right, nice and easy. Works pretty well. All right, so that's kind of the wrap on that part. So now let's go back to wrap up. And all right, cool. That's always helpful when this runs. Now, if I do ng-serve dash o, I could run this. Let me actually clear this. And if I do ng, if you haven't done Angular CLI before, this would actually run the app, but we don't want to do that quite yet. Now, what I'm going to do is I have an app that's kind of already baked and ready to go, but let me show you what this just did. So there's my project. And notice that in my project, it already has all the Angular stuff you need. So if you haven't used the CLI, you can do ng-serve, and boom, you have a live server. Or you can do the other options I gave you if you want to include it in core. If you want to go in and do, instead of ng-serve, you can do ng-test, you can do ng-build, you can build for production. There's all these little, just really small command line things. I can generate services. I can say ng-generate service, or just ngg service. And so I did that earlier, and I have another project here I'm going to show you called Angular App, which is pretty much the app. And what I'm going to do, let me go back to the PowerShell here, and I'm going to do code. Oops. So I'm going to open this guy up in VS Code. And let me drill into the source real fast, app. And you'll notice I have almost identically the same exact code that you saw in the slide. Really, really close. So there is my constructor. I'm injecting HTTP. There's returning the observable right there. Now, I didn't put a type because I don't have an interface in this simple one. But I'll have some more, much more robust ones here in just a second. I'll show you. Now, I'm gonna probably have to change the port here. So let me go back to this running one. And all right, so there we go. Let's grab that. And let's come back to here. And I don't remember if it was the same or not, but I'll paste it in. OK. Now, all that's done is, you know, giving it the path to, obviously, my web API. So what I'm going to do now is if we come on back here, let's go back to, okay, Angular app, perfect. And now I can do this ng-serve-o. And let's go ahead and launch this up, and then we'll kind of go from there. So I had name and city, and I don't remember if that's actually what I chose here. Let's go look at the template real quick. So this gets the data. The component, I'll let this load. There we go. The component itself, you'll notice, has customers. There's where my subscription that you already saw. All right, very similar there. And then my component simply writes out the name and the city. So we do a little ng4, that's an Angular directive, to loop through all the customers I get back, and then, you know, hopefully write those out there. So let's go back. Okay, and there is the phenomenal output. So now I'm communicating with that web API setup with just a little bit of code. You know, and I use the Angular CLI to generate this. Now, I know you're going, wow, Dan, that's almost to our enterprise level there. All right, now this next one, I won't say it's enterprise level either, but let me go ahead and stop these real quick. So in the links, which I'll give you in the next slide here, let's see, let's close that guy down. I have a little more robust one for you. Now, this one is in the same project. You'll see it's got a lot more. It does gets and puts and posts and, you know, insert, update, deletes, CRUD operations. So let me go ahead and fire this up, and then we'll wrap up here since I got about 1 minute left. Perfect. All right, so I'll tell you what. While this is firing up, let me go back, and I'll give you the links again, or the one link you need to know. You don't need to memorize these. Actually, before you leave today, you know, just make sure you have these memorized. But I'll give you one link again that you can get to these. So first off, the project I'm going to show right now is the third one down from the top. It's the ASP.NET Core Customers Service. This is actually based on, I'm doing a Pluralsight course right now on this. It's not quite done, but almost. And then you'll notice there's one that Seed project. There's one if you want to use Docker with Angular and Core and other databases like PostgreSQL. You'll have that. And then I have a blog post that's going to get you to TypeScript projects I have, ES 2015 projects, Hello World for Angular, More Advanced for Angular, those type of projects. And you can read through that post. Now, I'll pop this up in just a sec, and we'll go back to that. Oh, this paused. Great. All right, come on. All right, cool. Well, it paused right as it was trying to load the data, so let's see if it pops in here or not. I might have to refresh. All right, so this is actually calling a RESTful API that I have that actually hits a database and all that fun stuff. There we go. And it has full CRUD operations. It's all Angular, has Angular routes, and you can delete and, you know, do all kinds of fun stuff. I'll let you play with it. Little filtering, paging, stuff like that. A lot of the stuff that you need in typical enterprise-type app. And so you'll be able to get to that code if you're interested. So to wrap up, can you integrate with, let me pop that one up, that's the one link you'll need. Can you integrate Angular with ASP.NET Core? Absolutely. Lots of different ways. If you want to put it in the same project, great. I showed you three ways. Find a seed project, use .NET CLI, or you could even use the Angular CLI if you wanted. I kind of like to keep it separate unless I have a reason that I have to secure my views, which normally I don't need to. But if you want MVC to generate your views, you could do that, actually. And in that case, you would want Angular in your MVC project, of course. There's a lot of options there. So a lot of people kind of, I think, get hung up on it's got to be in the same project. And actually, no, it doesn't. It could be separate if you want. And if you're into the microservices, that would be the way you'd want to go anyway, right? You'd have a separate project for your different RESTful services or projects, and then Angular could call into that. So I hope that gives you some things to think about and a little bit of an intro to integrating Angular with ASP.NET Core RESTful services. Thanks for coming. Enjoy the rest of the conference.